Well, I just posted the lyrics to the song so you guys can just hum it to yourself while you read them. And it's almost as good, although I hope all of you have purchased your copy of that song already on iTunes so you can listen to it whenever you want, because it's a great song, whether it's you're listening to us or just want to listen to some music. Jordan Page, by the way, it's going to be a future guest in the near future. Can't tell you about what yet. So we've been sworn to secrecy, but yeah. So yeah, it seems like we're kind of under some kind of attack, doesn't it?
Well, either that or it's just plain bad luck. I've had weird internet issues all day today. It sounds like we're broadcasting, so that is a success. But we had major
check.
So somebody, well, if you're in the chat, let us know if you could hear us. Yeah, just post that you can hear us so that we can try to fix the problem if you can't hear us. So let's do a mic check. Can you guys hear us in chat? Somebody posted negatory
on
the audio. I'm going to mute and then reload and see. Okay, it sounds like we're broadcasting. So, and Jill says, yes, we're good. Okay.
Okay.
Well, let's rock this. So I think the bumper played and everything.
Well, okay, so I'm just going to read the lyrics here. So you guys listen to the sound that you hear like an echo in your head. There's a strange vibration rising. I'm not going to sing this because it'll ruin it. I'm just going to talk them out. Out from the heart of America, America, listen to the sound of the drum calling players to the game of the New World Order. Don't be caught unaware when the heads start rolling. No, it couldn't happen here. I know it wouldn't happen here. I will not submit to the authority of man. I love that line. I'm alive. I'm awake. This is more than I can take. If you had an open door, would you kill a little more? So thank you, Jordan Page, for writing this song. It gives me shivers every time I hear it. And I've listened to this song hundreds of, maybe even 1,000 times. I listen to it almost every day. Sometimes
yeah,
two or three
too.
Times a day.
Yeah.
So it's just incredible. And we need to support people like Jordan Page, because there aren't very many people out there that are being supported by the establishment that are writing songs like this. In fact, I don't think there's any. The people that are writing songs like this don't get any support except from you, who are listeners. And if you don't support them financially by buying their music, by passing the word on to other people, by, you know, listening to their videos or watching their videos on YouTube, if you don't give them some kind of an income stream, they have to start focusing their energies on providing for the family, and that's going to disappear. And the best way to change people's minds is through the media, through the people like Jordan, people that make films like David, people that, whether that's David Kirk West, who's occasional co-host here. It's really important. And if they just get they're not asking for a lot. They're just asking for enough to go month to month and keep doing what they're doing. And he's got about 20 songs he's written that he wants to record and put out on CD. And he needs to finish raising some money. He's getting really close to the amount he needs. He doesn't want to, you know, sometimes he's a little short every month. He doesn't want, or on a given month, he doesn't want to take money out of his savings for that recording. But he doesn't want to take food off the table for his family either. So he needs that support every month, or that recording's never going to take place. And these 20 songs are just awesome. I've heard about a dozen of them, and they're probably the ones he likes the best, but I can guarantee you he doesn't do bad songs. So anyway, we have an interesting show tonight. I think what's happened since our Thanksgiving show with Dennis is that I'm not getting in touch with him very well, and I think I'm going to have to use a different method. So I don't think he gets my emails in time.
Oh, yeah, you should probably just call him.
Yeah, I probably will have to resort to that. So I will do that. In the meantime, what we had planned for tonight was to give a discussion of Lysander Spooner, and Drew informed me prior to going on the show today that he's just about finished the No Treason, which is one of the books that Lysander Spooner authored, one of the two major books. I don't know if there were any others than those two, but it's quite a feat to read that. I have not read it, so that makes Drew the expert in this conversation.
You really need to read it.
I do.
There's a PDF that you could grab off of Mises called Let's Abolish Government, and it was a collection of Lysander Spooner's writings put together by Murray Rothbard. So how does it get any better than that?
not much.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of introduce our topic a little bit here, because I would say that even in his day, it would be hard to characterize Lysander Spooner as a constitutionalist.
Yeah, he was not a constitutionalist.
And he saw there were a lot of problems with it. But I want I want to also state my opinion and say that for the time that it was written, the Constitution was an amazing document, because these are ideas that had never, ever been tried before in the world. And so no one was sure what it would work, and a lot of them were afraid. That's why some of these weasel clauses are in there that make it weak, or that make the government strong and the people's rights weaker. Those little back doors like you find on computers where they can, you know, the programmers can go in there and change things or get into your computer and mess them up. It's kind of like that was done to the Constitution a little bit, mainly by Alexander Hamilton and his minions. Things like the Commerce Clause and the fact that the judges were appointed for life. It gave some extraordinary power to people that, you know, you can't really get them out of office, and get the wrong people in there. You can have things like the Dred Scott decision, and you could have things like the Roe versus Wade, and they're just... Their opinions are just ludicrous. Or the more recently, the I forget, it's the one on the property on the coast up in the New England states. Gosh, what was that? The property rights case. It was just absurd rulings. And then the most recent, the Obamacare debacle. So these are just because they have people that are there for life, and they're there to just control the, through that power that they have, and they make really big impact on the society. And a lot of times it's a very negative impact. So it's, you know, that was a definite flaw, I think. And there's more, but I want to also say, for all these different flaws that are in there, I think the founders or the people that wrote it realized that a perfect document couldn't be written, that they just didn't know enough. They didn't have enough experience with this new concept of people governing themselves and freedom. And they just didn't they didn't know. You know, there were some people there that I guess we would call them today kind of anarchists, but then they were just called freedom fighters. But they were, these are people more like Patrick Henry, Sam Adams. They really just, they didn't want to sacrifice any principle that would eliminate even the smallest part of freedom, personal freedom. And that any power that government had would only be to defend freedom. It wouldn't be to prescribe how people would live, whether we agreed with how they lived or not. And I think that's maybe that kind of understanding that it wasn't a perfect document is what eventually moved Jefferson to say that the tree of liberty had to be watered every so often with the blood of patriots. And he didn't mean that you have to go out to foreign shores and attack countries. He means that you have to overthrow a government, start another one, because it's going to try and the government is going to try and, you know, strangle you and put you back in enslavement and all this sort of thing, and which they have. But he thought it every generation needed to do that. So every 20 to 30 years. But they haven't, it hasn't taken place. Well, Lysander Spooner, I think, would have been a like-minded Thomas Jefferson. I think he was born, he should have been born a century earlier, and grown up within the Revolution. I think he would have been a very, I think he still would have been anti-Constitution. I think he would have been a big defender of the original Articles of Confederation, and maybe in fixing that, he would have taken more power away from the government, made it even a weaker document than it was supposed to have been. Because that's kind of how he thought things should be, is that the smallest government is that which governs, is the one that's going to govern best. So we need to have, you know, government maybe should be capped at maybe 40,000 people, and then you have another country, or you have another governing unit, and they can work in agreement on certain things, but basically they stay out of each other's business. That's his kind of, I don't know if that's exactly what he believed, but I have the feeling from what I have read that he just didn't think any centralizing of power would ever amount to anything good. And he had an amazing life. He set up a competing company to the U.S. Post Office, and they hauled him off to prison for that. And he fought him in court, and he won, which was amazing considering the federal court would defend him or would find him not guilty. they were accusing him. They weren't defending him. He was an amazing individual. But let's start with the Constitution, Drew.
Well, you know, the most interesting thing about Spooner was that he was an abolitionist, and he was pro-secession. So let the status just simmer on that for a minute. Just let that sink in. Okay, did that just make your head explode?
All you people down there in Siskiyou County, see, there's no. The only thing that you can attest to racism and secession is in your mind.
Right. Right.
So secession is about, I don't want to be governed by a bunch of people 3,000 miles away that don't have my best interests at heart, that are controlled by corporate stooges.
Right. Exactly. Now, what Spooner points out in his book, No Treason, was that, you know, the Civil War wasn't about freeing slaves. People think that we've been taught that in school, but actually, you know, there were big large industries in the North that actually had an interest in industries in the South, and it was, you know, very profitable to operate your plantations and other businesses with slave labor, and so, you know, there was pressure to abolish slavery coming from the North, and so there was essentially a corporatocracy in place that was maintaining the status quo, you know, and allowing slave labor to work these for these companies down in the South. And but the thing is that these guys that were allowing this to happen, you know, and to facilitate it through government and to prevent abolition, they were, you know, wanting money from these companies in the South. You know, they want some payola, and After a while, the price was too high, and these businessmen in the South, they didn't want to pay, and so you had these monopolists in the North that, wanted complete control over these businesses, and so they wanted a complete monopoly, and so they used this whole idea of abolition to wage war and to conquer the South and to gain control of these industries. And so, it was just, your typical crony capitalist battling it out over power and human resources, natural resources, control of monopolies. And that's what that whole thing was all about. Spooner obviously was an abolitionist. However, he did support the South's right to secede, if they so desired. As far as the Constitution goes, Spooner basically made the case that the founders didn't have the right to enter all of us into a social contract. To say that, okay, we've decided to do this, we've signed this, and now everybody is bound to this forever, and nobody can do that. How could they do that? No, nobody alive right now, and nobody alive during Spooner's time had consented to that contract.
That's right. I don't
Therefore,
remember signing anything.
no. Therefore, nobody could be legally bound by it. You know,
And
so. So, I look at the Constitution, I consider myself a constitutionalist to the point where I want to use every tool I have at my disposal to bind down the government, and so when I'm dealing with your typical conservative-minded person, that's a pretty easy way to win them over to your way of thinking of making government smaller and abolishing government altogether, and so you get them on board with holding the government to the Constitution, and which is nearly impossible. I mean, the Constitution, I mean, the government violates our natural rights all of the time, and so I see it as a way to get to our ultimate goal, which is the complete abolition of government. I don't want to jump ahead in our discussion tonight, but this was really the core of Spooner's philosophy, that nobody was alive, nobody's living right now that consented to this. Therefore, nobody can be legally bound by the terms of the Constitution.
You know, Drew, I think this might be a good time to know we have phones tonight, correct?
Phones are open if anybody wants to
Yeah,
call
and
in.
if anybody has signed this contract and they have consented to the rule of our present government, if they've signed this contract, would you call in and let our listeners know how they can, if they want to support this, how they can sign up? And for those of you who don't want to, they obviously would have, in a free country, they would have the choice not to consent, I assume. So if
Well, yeah,
If
I mean,
anyone was forced to sign up, I would like to know that too.
right. Well, yeah, I mean, I just happened to be born here, and then, suddenly I'm held to the terms of this contract, and I'm supposed to, I'm supposed to, labor for this system, and basically engage in just a more sophisticated, technocratic form of slavery. I didn't consent to this. Nobody asked me, and so really, each generation should have to make the choice of how they wish to live. And
Yeah.
each and groups of people are going to want to live in different ways.
How it would be an interesting experiment to find out how many people out there would consent to our present government to, living under their laws. And if it was less than 50%, I would think the government would have to all resign. All of them, all the
Yeah, but
bureaucrats, all the agencies, everything would have to quit.
we're supposed to.
And if people didn't even vote, if they and so if there was an undervote, if they If they didn't get more than 50% of the eligible people in the United States to say, yes, we consent, then they would have to resign. I think that would be...
Well, that's still not good enough.
It'd be a step.
It is a step, but when you start looking at this majority rules, you know, tyranny of the majority and so on and so forth, you know, you have to figure out, well, how should you really deal with that? You need to be able to respect minority rights. I mean, that's what a constitutional republic is all about. So that the majority doesn't trample on the rights of minorities. So in order to deal with that, you need to have a more complex system where if you've had a situation where the rights of a majority or a minority are going to be infringed, well then. You need to have like a majority of the minority to consent to that, you know, and then I don't know how far down the road you go to that, you know, if you got a minority within that minority, a small subset of that minority, right? Ultimately, people should be able to
50% plus one shouldn't be able to control the future of 50% minus one.
Exactly. That's the concept that we're trying to get across to people.
Yeah. So the Constitution then was supposed to be a document that protected the rights of 100% of the people by constraining government from becoming a tyrannical ruling body, which it has proven totally ineffective in doing. So we're living under more oppression than the people who fought the American Revolution were.
Well, what happens is that government is always used as a force to plunder others, you know, to plunder one party, you know, to benefit another party, and that's how it's used. That's how the whole corporatocracy functions. We've talked about this in other episodes, but you've got, you know, people want to control government so that they could create laws that make their business more profitable at the expense of their competitors, and that's how it's used now. You know, it's a weapon used by the corporations. And then you've got all the other issues that people wrangle over, you know, and things like free speech issues and right to life and these kinds of things that people wrangle over and stuff. But you know, these corporocrats, they don't care about that stuff. They want people divided up into, you know, their right and left thinking parties and fighting amongst each other over things that they would consider trivial, you know, while they're working on their TPP deals and things like that.
Yeah, speaking of TPP, there was an interesting quote from Not a Zero Sum Game that I posted in our Facebook page this week. It's about countries – it's not possible for a country to trade with another country. And I'm going to say it again. It is not possible for one country to trade with another country. All the trade is done by individuals. And maybe individuals working in a grouping, like a group of industries or whatever, but it's basically individuals. Mm-hmm. And so if all trade is individual, what right does the government have to regulate, to set up tariffs, to do anything that interferes with our ability to buy and sell what we want to? Where do they get that right? I don't see that right in the Constitution. The government has any power at all like that. They have, I think they are said that they are, that certain bodies are to put in tariffs, but I think that they were supposed to be pretty limited to items. I have to go back and read the Federalist Papers again. I don't think they meant these wide sweeping tariffs that helped bring on the Great Depression, for instance, the Smoot-Hawley tariffs. I think after their experience with the Stamp Act and the Sugar Act and all these things, they really didn't want tariffs. There may be a few things they wanted to keep out of the country, and they're going to use that as a way to slow down its, you know, raise the cost to the consumer so there wouldn't be so much traffic in those things. I think there was a tariff on slavery, for instance, But I don't think that they really meant for it to be in every aspect of our life and be something that becomes part of it's the first step to wars. It's what brought Japan to attack us is how unfairly we traded them. We treated them by government creating powers it didn't have to make them very upset with us because we were, we cheated them. So this is all there was to it. And so we kind of baited them into attacking Pearl Harbor. We knew it was coming and we let it happen so we could get into the war. It's just really sick. So right there is just in tariffs, which they were probably trying to get rid of the slave issue because they were just bringing slaves in this country and it was causing all sorts of political problems. So they probably would say, well, let's just tax it and it'll go away. And people think, well, that's a pragmatic solution. We can bend our philosophy a little bit for that, but it really was a mistake. Should have been no. It's just that free markets will be more effective than slaves, and it'll go away on its own. And the rest of the world that nobody fought a civil war that cost 750,000 lives, they all just paid the people for their slaves, and the people let their slaves go, and it cost far less than a civil war cost. I mean, like maybe 0.5% of what the Civil War cost. And certainly in terms of human lives, it was 0% compared to what the Civil War cost. So that's my opinion on that. I'm not a historical scholar. Thomas Woods, if you're listening,
okay, I think we're broadcasting again. We lost the network, and so we've reconnected. And let's do a mic check. If you guys let us know if you can hear us. Sorry, typical
Yeah.
Thursday evening technical difficulties.
I think the NSA is after our ass because
I don't know. My internet has been super buggy today. I've had all kinds of weird issues all day today. And I don't know if it's a local thing. I run a few different computers. I was having the same problems with each computer. So, anyway, so back to Lysander Spooner's book. I'll try to find where I'm at here. I'm trying to read this on my Kindle, which I actually downloaded a PDF to my Kindle, and the type is like super, super small. So it's very challenging to read this. I'll pick this up here. The Constitution, having never been signed by anybody, and there being no other open, written, or authentic contract between any parties whatever, by virtue of which the United States government so-called is maintained, and it being well known that none but male persons of 21 years of age and upwards are allowed any voice in government, and being also well known that a large number of these adult persons seldom or never vote at all, and that all those who do vote do so secretly by secret ballot. And in a way, to prevent their individual votes being known either to the world or even to each other, and consequently, in a way to make no one openly responsible for their acts of their agents or representatives, all of these things being known, the questions arise: who composed the real government power in the country? Who are the men, the responsible men, who rob us of our property, restrain us of our liberty, subject us to their arbitrary dominion, and devastate our homes, and shoot us down by the hundreds of thousands if we resist? How shall we find these men? How shall we know them from others? How shall we defend ourselves and our property against them? Who are our neighbors? Are members of this secret band of robbers and murderers? How can we know which are their houses that we may burn or demolish them? Which their property that we may destroy it? Which their persons that we may kill them and rid the world and ourselves of such tyrants and monsters? These are questions that must be answered before men can be free, before they can protect themselves against the secret band of robbers and murderers who now plunder, enslave, and destroy them. The answer to these questions is that only those who have the will and the power to shoot down their fellow men are the real rulers in this, as in all other so-called civilized countries, for by no others will civilized men be robbed or enslaved. So that just summarizes Spooner's position, and his reasoning behind his position, and the whole ethos of Lysander Spooner. Another interesting thing that he gets into later on in this chapter is war, and how all wars are bankster wars. And this book, it was written in the 1860s, I believe. And surprisingly, he talks extensively about the Rothschilds being involved in funding wars between countries, and
Yes, and that's this is
it's incredible how nothing has changed. All of this
yeah.
time has passed, and really nothing has changed. Civilization is almost exactly the same today as it was back then. Perhaps the problems have gotten worse. And the same people are in power, or the same families at least.
That's another line from another Jordan Page song. He's talking about the banksters funding both sides of the war. I
Yeah.
can't remember which one it was. It might be Listen. But it's I listened to that whole CD so much, I can't always remember which song it's from, but it's been going on with the Rothschilds. It's like the same, it's they're in their playbook. They know it works. It basically bankrupts both sides of the war, because all war does is destroy wealth, and the Rothschilds end up going up and kind of getting to foreclose on a bunch of property and wealth that's left
Well, another thing
after the
too
end of
is
the
they
war.
get, government bonds are sold, and then the banksters get, they get cashed out, they get paid off with their high interest, and then everybody else who invested in the bonds is hung out to dry.
And that's how they take down countries. They financed Hugo Chavez, and he took over Venezuela, and he made sure he made every payment on his bonds that he had to finance whatever he was doing. And they were getting that money from oil sales. They have so bankrupted that country that this is a country that has one of the largest oil reserves in the world. They now import oil. I'll say that again. Venezuela is now an oil importing nation. this is the The Rothschilds, or the bankers, international bankers, have economically destroyed Venezuela.
Incredible.
Yeah, and we posted a story. It was off of Sovereign Man on our Facebook page about a woman who makes her living standing in line for people for toilet paper.
Oh yes, I saw that.
And that's you know, Cuba now is no longer by itself at the bottom of the economic status. There's Venezuela has joined them. Now, a place where economic statistics have no meaning. I think the center. We'll get back to the Spooner. I think the center of all his philosophy is that you need to decentralize power. That every time you centralize it, you increase power. Then there's more than that power structure. Then is usually going to use that power and authority to create more power and become more centralized, more activities in our life and I don't know the words I'm searching for here, but it becomes larger and grows when you give it any power at all. And it takes more power all the time until it becomes this tyrannical, intrusive apparatus into our daily lives that has become. And he wanted, I think he would be just really pleased with a bunch of little city states.
Or as Doug Casey puts it, 7 billion nation states.
There you go. That would be the oven. Everybody being a sovereign man would be right. Ideal. I'm not sure that that would always be that way. I think there'd always be people that will want to try and gain some sort of power by joining forces with other people. And so they may in their own mind, maybe, but they'll find that not too many people want to follow them. And then so they'll try and force them to follow them. And then that's what always happens. So they get a little bit of power. All of a sudden, you're trying to force your way of life on someone else, and so 7 billion nation states wouldn't be bad. I think it would work pretty well, and you'd be surprised how many people would join forces together and act cooperatively, and it would be for society's benefit. They wouldn't necessarily try to change people's lives because they just want to. There are a lot of people out there that just want to serve other people to make a profit. They don't want to go out and plunder and steal through taxation. It's just despite governments, there's still a lot of people out there that believe in that kind of activity where you prosper by serving your fellow man. It's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And
one of the questions that I was going to pose for Dennis if he was here, and I'll pose it for Drew because you're the resident expert now today.
If we had
a really greatly decentralized, let's say we had 350 million nation states in the United States. Is this going to make travel difficult? Is this going to make, did you think it's going to, every person has his, he controls his house and he has his own laws for that house. And do you think it's going to be confusing for people? Is it going to be kind of too chaotic? Or do you think there's going to be order that would arise out of that chaos?
Well, yeah, I believe in spontaneous organization, and we've seen time and time again how that works. When the traffic lights go out, things move quite orderly.
In most of the cases, it does. Yeah,
yeah. Everything's fine.
In some cases, I think more than not, it actually moves more smoothly without the traffic signals.
Oh, totally does. Yeah, you don't have as much of a queue, and people organize and get through the intersection. And we've seen video of really chaotic intersections that looked super organized when the traffic lights quit working, and there weren't any accidents. So
yeah, and people tend to slow down because they know it isn't. They don't trust the lights to regulate things properly, and they pay more attention, so there's fewer accidents. Oh, how about that? People pay more attention to their driving because they know that nobody else is supposedly doing this. They pay more attention and there are fewer accidents. How about that?
Now, I think that, a lot of people respect private property. I mean, it's really what it's all about is are people going to respect private property? Are they going to respect other people's personal rights. And I think for the most part, people will. And of course, you have some people who don't. One of the things that troubles me on a nearly daily basis is, mainly because I run a lot of commercial property, is that people think that commercial property, because it has businesses that are on it that are places of public accommodation, therefore means that those places are also commons, and they don't treat them as private property. And they are, and I've noticed this even with government. Government doesn't seem to look at commercial property as private property, but it's just as private as somebody's house.
And
And
I have a perfect example of this. This was dealing with a police authority. There was a bank that was robbed near the business where I work. And the police, knowing that we have security camera in our store, and it also goes into the parking lot, they came in and they sequestered all of our information. They just took it off of our computers that we stored on, and they screwed up our computers doing it. They had no regard for what they just wanted their stuff, and they didn't care to put it back. They didn't, they just can't interfere with the government. And so they actually destroyed it. It cost us a little bit of money to get that put restored and put back where it's how it should, excuse me, how it should be. It wasn't a large amount. It's not, and it's, but it's how little regard they have for someone else's property.
No, it's true. I experienced that when I was working up in Seattle. I was running a huge residential property up there, and some guy, he was a detective, plainclothed detective, came into my office demanding access to my files because there was somebody who lived on the property that he was investigating, and this guy looked like a bum. I mean, he just total slob, and he just comes in and demands records. And so, I said, well, I'm not going to give any of my records to you. I said, this I have a fiduciary obligation. I have to maintain people's privacy. These are my clients' files, and I can't just give you access to this. Go and get a warrant. And I said, I don't even know who you are. And then he shows me a badge, and I said, well, how do I know what your badge is supposed to look like? How do I, you could probably get those made and, order them. I don't know. I don't know what your official badge is supposed to be, and he gets pissed off. He got really mad at me, and he started yelling at me and threatening me. And I just stood my ground. And I just told him off.
You should have said, this proves that a real police officer would never act in the way, in the manner that you're acting. You're acting like some kind of criminal thug.
Well, one then he calmed down after he realized that I wasn't going to put up with it. And he goes, well, I didn't know you were going to bust my chops, and he starts trying to play, good cop with me instead. But yeah, it's just there's really not a lot of respect for personal and property rights when it comes to commerce, when it comes to businesses. But there is no difference, you own a business, your rights extend to that business. It's your business, your records, everything, your property, everything extends to that. So that's, I see this right now. People always think that we're utopians in some way, that we're pushing towards something, and people that it's unattainable. And people always want ask me, and I see this happen to others as well, to cite an example, where what we propose actually worked, and my response is, why should I? When this system has failed so miserably, and even now with all of this government and all these laws and everything, people aren't respecting the rights of others. They aren't respecting the personal and property rights of individuals. And
Is it?
so it's failing right now. So why not try something different? Something that would exist just based on the fact that rights exist,
So
right?
it'd be hard to be worse than the present state of affairs.
But
Right. this reminds me of a really good Thomas Sowell quote. He says, there are laws against illegal activities. They don't seem to be working.
No. No, they're not working. And
And the more laws we make, the more people we have in our prisons.
but you look at, you take like the condo community where you live, you don't have traffic lights going through the property. It's a pretty big property. There's roads through there. They're well maintained. You don't have some guy in a van taking pictures of people, or running a radar detector, or writing citations, or anything like that. But it's very nice. I feel very safe when I'm there. Nobody's ever demanded my wallet or had a traffic accident with me or anything like that. And it's all private. It's totally private.
And this is the person who's I guess he's the chairman of our association. He's kind of one of those power mad guys who that if you give him enough power, he's going to start infringing on your daily activities. He loves to be, he's a control freak guy. And the fact that he can't get even enough people to come to a meeting to have a quorum to change any regulations is just fine by me.
Well, I've noticed that. I've run three homeowners associations, I think, maybe four. Most people don't want to participate, and then you get a few people that want to control everybody else. So,
Yeah, and put his
and
little notes in our
yeah.
monthly newsletters, says, get your bill for your dues, and says, everybody's reminded that there's a leash law, and this is because one person, dog got loose from him and ran inside this happened to be a Muslim, and ran inside his house. And for those of you who don't understand, dogs in Muslim countries or in their societies are kind of like the same. They're seen kind of the same way we would see rats or cockroaches. They're scavengers and they're not clean. And so they're just horrified to have anything to do with a dog. It's calling someone a dog is one of the worst insults you can have. And anyways, this dog got loose and he opened his door. There was shouting going on. I opened to see what's going on. The dog ran inside his house. And because of that, we're promptly reminded of the fact that there are leash laws. And well, gosh, you know what? The dog got off the leash. I mean, gee whiz.
Yeah, hey, sometimes things happen. No harm done.
That's right. And even the person that the dog ran into the house, he just registered a complaint that, I wish that people would be more respectful of the other people. And he didn't want a circulation put out. He was kind of embarrassed by the whole thing. And so I know there's a, but our control freak in charge, he had to make sure everybody was under double secret scrutiny now. We're going to be watching you on the cameras that we've installed for security purposes.
Yeah.
So
Well,
it's.
and government is incredibly inefficient. Things can get done in a much more efficient way when it's enacted by individuals or through groups in the private sector.
Working cooperation.
Well, yeah, it's because government has no incentive to do things efficiently, and these budgets just grow and grow and grow, and government takes on more responsibilities, and then it funds itself through taxation, and we pay all these these local taxes that we pay that are levied on our properties. A lot of it we didn't get to vote on at all,
Yeah.
and then you get people that don't own anything that vote for things that they want to use, it just really upsets me when people talk about how they want a water park, and it's usually people that don't own anything. And they're like, yeah, I want a free water park, support the water park. That
And I
is
want everybody else to pay for it.
right. I don't want the water park and I don't want to pay for it. And then people go, yeah, well, it'll be good for the economy. Oh, I don't understand how that
Yeah,
works,
so how's that
but
producing something of value?
yeah, but I
It's
mean,
like it's a recreational thing. It's more like.
if it's a good business idea, then let somebody start a business and have a water park. That's how it works.
Yeah.
This isn't Disneyland, and Walt Disney isn't the mayor, So, government needs to stay out of the water park business
You know,
and stop taxing me.
it's supposed to be Lysander Spooner night, and I don't mean to keep bringing up Thomas Sowell, but in his book Basic Economics, he's given a really good example of how power of government creates conflict and division in the societies. He used the example of land use planning, zoning ordinances, and things of this nature. Planning commissions will get together and they'll decide what use there should be for this property. Well, they say, well, we should have a church here. We should save this property here for a church. Well, there might be three or four different churches that would like to use that property. Only one can do it. So now they start, one of them might be a synagogue, and one of them might be a church, and one of them might be a mosque. Well, now, the people are maybe that they're a Catholic church. Maybe they knowing that they have a more support politically, then they start kind of doing this maybe start putting in some derogatory comments about these other religions and trying to put them down a little bit so they could get an inside track to get this property because they want to use any method they can because that's a really good place for them to center their church. And the two minority religions or that have fewer members and fewer connections in the community, they're going to fight back all along. So then all of a sudden we have all this division. They're kind of like warring bodies. And it's only happened because the government has restricted supply. They've put in artificial regulations. And so now instead of people being able to vote, by just, people can sell their property for what they want to whoever they want. Suddenly the government's involved in it. Now it's political. And now it's almost open warfare. Where if it was back in a free market, they could all be on the same corner. They got, different three of the four corners in that block or that intersection could have they could have a synagogue, a mosque, and a church in the same. And they would all get along famously because nobody is trying to restrict the other one because they all have what they want. And this is how government it puts us against each other. Because no one is free to pursue happiness.
Well, and this gets done in ways that most people wouldn't even understand. They wouldn't even think of it. But the greatest tyranny is being implemented through building codes and zoning codes. That's where most of the authority lies, right there. And that's where you've got literally, unelected people behind the scenes, literally shaping the world around us, literally determining what kind of business organization can exist and where, and making it completely expensive to the point of being impossible for certain types of businesses to open and operate. And this is all done under the guise of keeping us safe. But also I think it ties into some of the Agenda 21 and sustainable development stuff. I think it has to fall into that because it makes things just so prohibitively expensive. I mean, you have to get super creative if you're going to open some sort of a business within an existing building to try to be able to do it without having to spend, say, $100,000 for overhead fire sprinklers. And I mean, you have to have a code expert to go through there and try to figure out a way to hack the code, literally hack the building code to try to prove that you can do what you want to do on private property. That's what gets me. We're talking about private property here. And you have other people deciding what can be done with property that they don't own. That's outrageous. Completely outrageous. This gets me too, is they've got sign codes in almost every city. In Medford, you have to apply for a sign permit, and then there's a review process so people can voice their opinions. So if somebody doesn't like the sign that you want to put up on your building, then they could say so, and they could try to prevent you from being able to put up the sign. That's insane. I mean, people shouldn't be able to determine that type of thing, what a sign can say, what it could look like, with the colors, whether or not it's illuminated, all of these things. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, just because you don't like the way something looks doesn't mean you have the right to stop somebody from putting it up
Yeah.
on their building.
And
You
last
know?
time I checked, there's no guarantee that in the Constitution that you have the right to not be offended.
No, you don't have the right to a nice view. There's no right unless you own the property that you're viewing. You have no right. You know, you have no right. You know, if your neighbor wants to, like what Tony Bones did, you know, she was gardening in her front yard and she used some old tires for planters. Well, now they're planters, but some people go, "Oh, there's a bunch of old tires in the yard. I don't like the way it looks." Well, tough luck. That's your problem. It's not your property. You know, I mean, sure, you know, it's nice when my neighbors put up cool Christmas decorations and things like that, and it looks all nice and almost like they put on this wonderful display just for me. You know, that's great, but they wanted to do it. You know, it was
That's
voluntary.
true.
You know, but if they wanted to grow weeds in their yard, like I like to, because I prefer to put most of my landscaping energy into my greenhouse and grow food. But you know, if they, you know, that's my right, and that's anybody's right. It's you know, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. But these codes are completely outrageous and
They
just
are. And you know,
trample all over property rights.
as much as you may enjoy those Christmas lights, there's probably some curmudgeon out there that doesn't.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that these people have to turn them off just for him or turn them on just for you. They should do what they want to do, and the rest of you can enjoy it or not. It doesn't matter. It only matter they're only doing it for themselves. And
Yeah.
if it makes them happy, they should be able to do it. They're not really hurting anybody. There's no I don't really believe there's such a thing as light pollution. You have things on your windows called curtains. You know, very
Yeah.
effective at shutting out the light. I don't know what you'd want to look out of your if there were no city lights and you why you'd want to have your windows uncurtained anyway at night. There's nothing to see there.
Well, yeah, it's different. Like if somebody's like blasting pollutants into the air, you know, and you're breathing the air and that sort of
Right.
thing. That's different. That's a completely different thing, and that's a violation of somebody's rights. And so, you know, those are things that you need to address. But I think that there's the place to deal with that outside of government.
But you know,
It's called arbitration.
I'm old enough that I can remember a time when there were no smoking ordinances and no things like that. And I never ever had anybody object to me asking them to put out their cigarette because I was kind of sensitive to smoke. It actually make my it kind of makes my nose get all plugged up. So it's hard for me to breathe out of my nose. I mean, it's not like a death sentence for me or anything, but just I'm. My mucus production system goes into overdrive when I have smoke in the air. And so it's, when there were forest fires and stuff around here, I'm just constantly blowing my nose. And, you know, it's just how it is for me. But I never had any problem. People were always very considerate and they say, "Oh, no, no problem." But now there's laws. It's like they feel like they're persecuted or something. They're a little more defensive about it. Like, well,
Well, now
isn't
you're
10 feet away
supposed.
from the thing like the law says far enough for you? Do you have to, you know,
Yeah, but also you're supposed. If you own a business, you're supposed to put a sign in your window that says, you know, "Don't smoke
Yeah.
within 10 feet of this entrance." Completely outrageous. Government's gotten out of control. Read Lysander Spooner's "No Treason."
Yeah, and it'd be really nice to be able to try a no government sometime and see how if it does work. I think the powers that be are afraid of that. See you next week, everybody.
To break.